Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock right now on this day, 1913, on the 11th of December, 1913. The Mona Lisa would be recovered after having gone missing from the Louvre for 2 years. In 1931, on this day, Japan would leave the gold standard officially. Interestingly enough, this would be 2 years before the United States would do it. So clearly the United States weren't the first to leave the gold standard behind. 1937, on this day, Italy would withdraw from the League of Nations. 1946, on this day, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund would be established by the UN General Assembly. The shortened abbreviation for that you might be familiar with, that's UNICEF. 1967, on this day, Concorde, the prototype supersonic plane, would be shown for the first time in France. 1986, on this day, the South African government would ban or would censor the press. It would be one of the most harsh censorships to come to the press, particularly from the government's perspective. So basically, this conversation almost didn't happen if life didn't turn out the way it did. In 2008, on this day, Bernie Madoff would be arrested for his Ponzi scheme, the $50 billion Ponzi scheme. In 2012, on this day, Stephen Hawking would win a $3 million prize for the Fundamental Physics Prize. It would be the most lucrative academic prize in the world, whilst on the exact same day in 2012, on the other side of the world, HSBC would, actually this would probably be in the same side of the world, HSBC would settle with the United States authorities for $1.9 billion for drug cartel money laundering. The banks. And in 2017, on this day, Saudi Arabia would end a 35-year ban on cinemas. What did the movies ever do? You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha, and on the show today, we're taking a look at the car powership deal. It's officially off the table. We're going to chat to the CEO of the Organization Undoing Tax Abuse, Wayne Duvenage, around their role in getting that deal off the table. The Ministry of Energy officially confirming that that is no longer going ahead, despite the fact that car powership had won that bid initially. Then we've got a conversation with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, the FSCA. We speak to them as often as we can. This time we're reflecting on the year that was for them, some of the themes and trends that stood out for them, and what 2025 could potentially look like. Then we've got a conversation with Alan Gray around the two-pot system, taking stock of the two-pot system this time of the year, pretty much the first 3 months or the first quarter of the two-pot's implementation since the 1st of September. We're going to take a look at and see what's been happening and what some trends have emerged, if we can see any. And then we're going to wrap the show up with an executive lounge segment. We're going to speak to a director at Atlas Finance around what he gets up to when he's not at work.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
As usual, we kick off the show with how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Senior Market Analyst at XNS, Terence Hove, to take a look at market movements throughout the day. Good evening, Terence. Lovely to catch up with you. CPI data, seemingly the theme of the day. We got our own CPI data out. The US CPI data came out. Let's start with local data. Still below 3%, etching up ever so slightly, but more importantly, still below 3%.
Yeah, good evening, Jimmy. Great to be back on the show. Thank you for having me. Very interesting day for CPI, I think, across the board. I think what's very interesting is what the Reserve Banks or central banks generally are going to do going into 2025. I think one of the key things that they were saying, that the key mantra in 2024 was that they were data-led. And now there seems to be a pivot into a forecasting sort of environment rather than a data-led environment. And the reason why I say this is because if we look at our own CPI data, I think we should have gotten another 25 basis points from the SARB, but we got 25. So all in, perhaps 50 would have been great because we are way below the midpoint, 4.5%. Again, we've got the U.S. Fed, the FOMC, deciding their interest rate move next week, Wednesday, on the 18th of December. But they're signaling that they're possibly going to do 25 and a probable hold going into 2025. Now, what that says is that the Trump trade, which has really been sort of the market sentiment, is sort of starting to take the charge ahead of inflation data. And that's where the interesting dynamic behind interest rates and inflation is coming in. And I think that's the key thing we need to look out for, how central banks are going to be approaching inflation going into 2025. But for now, the data is good. Inflation is coming down, but consumers would definitely want a little bit more from the central banks than what they're giving.
Terence, you mentioned that the Trump trade is going to take priority over these other issues going into next year. And I wonder, that Trump trade, if we look at the spanner that could be thrown in the works, a change of Fed governor, Fed chair in Jerome Powell. Yeah. We've already heard from Donald Trump threats that he's not afraid to get rid of Jerome Powell. We've seen that for Trump's conversations and rhetoric, a lot of it is threats. Do you think there's anything behind this particular threat at this stage?
It's interesting you say that, Jimmy, because I think the last time we were on the show together, around that time, U.S. Fed Chair was saying at the announcement, and I think this is soon after U.S. President Trump or President-elect Trump came into the election victory, he came out saying, you know, he's staying around, he's going to stick around, and, you know, he's really not going to be, kind of pushed out of his position, so to speak. Because if we recall, Jerome Powell and Trump have always had the back and forth, especially, you know, in public, you know, in media, where Trump has come out outright attacking U.S. Fed Jerome Powell. Yet, he was the president who nominated him, at the time. So it's interesting how that's going to play out. But I do think if the U.S. Fed, the current U.S. Fed, does not play out the way Donald Trump would like it to be played out in terms of the rate path, interest rate decision, comments within the markets, I think we're getting a very different, President Donald Trump this time around. He's had the previous experience, and because of the previous administration experience, he's probably going to want to move very swiftly with his policies. So anyone who's going to stand in the way, so to speak, of those policies is probably going to swiftly make those decisions as well. So I think that's going to be interesting as well in terms of how that interest rate path is going to play out in the coming years with the Trump trade and what the U.S. Fed chair position is going to look at.
Another angle for the different Donald Trump that we could get is one who simply doesn't care. It's his second presidential term. He's got nothing to lose. And it could be a wild, wild 4 years. Terence, I want to take a look at some movements that we saw throughout the day. We saw commodities moving quite strong. We saw that off the back of the U.S. inflation data, gold prices itching a little bit higher, back above $2,700 an ounce there. We obviously know that at this point, we are potentially still looking at markets like gold and Bitcoin continuing to go up. Whether or not they'll continue that momentum into the new year is another story. But at the same time, you're looking at markets like Canada that had an interest rate cut today, whilst markets like Brazil are expected to have an interest rate increase. The global dynamic is looking very, very different at, depending on which part of the world you're in. Are you seeing that this year is going to kind of, or the start of next year is going to be more volatile than kind of what we've gone through this year, understanding that we've gone through a lot this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on that last point, you're so right, Jimmy. We've gone through a lot this year. I think this has been a relatively extremely volatile year. And I think we're starting to see central bank divergence from the policies, and for some reason we had with this synchronization, and I say some reason knowing that it was all in the fight to push inflation lower, given the COVID years that we had, And the central bank independence somehow became questioned in this. And hence, you know, that point on some reason, because generally policy is not meant to be synchronized in different geographical locations because of different inflation factors in those different geographical locations. However, going into 2025, we're starting to see that central bank independence is really coming out. And yeah, I think 2025, we already, you know, hearing those headlines and the big headlines such as U.S. President, elect Trump coming out and saying ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia. That's a big headline, you know, and if that happens, probably, you know, markets are going to be looking out for the Middle East as well, for those comments, for that strong leadership to say ceasefire comments. And we'll start seeing a lot of risk coming out of the market. And a lot of that risk is currently priced in gold at the moment. I mean, you mentioned how the figures came out, how we're watching gold figures. They got to, you know, above 2,700 on the inflation data. That was softer than expected, the U.S. inflation data. But definitely the outlook going into 2025, I think the policy that the U.S. President Donald Trump is going to be announcing, in particular against trade, that's also going to be very volatile, you know. And I think he's going to use trade policy as a tool to really align American interests to other different geographical interests as well.
Terence, before I let you go, the Rand breaking 1770, currently at 1769. Your thoughts around that and where you think the Rand's going to end the year?
Yeah, no, I think the Rand has definitely taken advantage of, you know, the softer U.S. inflation. That's very good. I mean, I think at the end of the year, probably 17. I'm a bit too nervous to go anywhere below 17 because that Trump trade really genuinely has a lot of legs to it. And I think that's what's making the US dollar resilient when we thought the dollar trade was done. So I think 17 or a little below 17 or 1680 will be about the level that we'll get to at the end of the year. But again, we've got the US FOMC next week, Wednesday. So that's the big one to look out for as we wrap out 2024.
That's an ambitious target below 17 Rand. I happen to think we're going to settle probably around the 1750 mark, but we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that and we'll see where we end up for the end of the year. Thanks so much, Terence, for the time and for the insights. Terence Hove, Senior Market Analyst, XNest, joining me to take a look at the market movements throughout the day, as well as some data points that came out.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Retirement has been top of mind this year, with the introduction of the two-pot system sparking many complex questions and conversations. Tune into the SAFM Market Update this evening at 6:45 as Richard Carter, Head of Assurance at Allan Gray, joins me to take a look at the key considerations investors should think about when it comes to their retirement as they look ahead. Brought to you by Allan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investment, Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
So a couple of months ago, we were looking at a deal. I say a couple of months ago, but it was probably pre the elections. We were looking at a deal in which a certain company called Car Powership would have its ships docked just off the coast of South Africa, supplying energy into South Africa. And there was a lot of debate about that deal. There were a lot of questions around the merits of that deal, whether or not it's going ahead and what to make of it. And we finally have some definitive clarity is that that deal is now no longer on the table. And one of the organizations that was heavily involved in ensuring that the deal's objections were heard is the Organization Undoing Tax Abuse. I'm joined on the line by Wayne Duvenacher, the CEO of Outer, to take a look at the developments around the Car Powership deal and what it means for us now. Good evening, Wayne. Lovely to catch up with you, as always. Take us through where we officially stand from the Ministry of Energy. The deal's off the table. How did we get here?
Yeah, thank you. It actually goes back a couple of years. During the years of load shedding, government put out a process or followed a process to introduce energy solutions on a what you call a short term. It was almost an emergency type of procurement process. And they divvied up about just over 2,000 megawatts, of which Carpower Ships put in a bid, and they got 1,200 megawatts of energy approval to tender for this or to put forward their bid. And long story short, NERSA approved their licenses. But without having financial closure, without having all the environmental approvals in place. Now, this is three ships that would have been docked in three different harbors, one in Richards Bay, one in Coga, and one in the Cape area, in Cape Town, I think. And collectively, they would have given us an extra 1,200 megawatts. Now, that's equivalent to about one stage of load shedding. But the problem with this deal, as I said, without even having the environmental approvals and the financial closure, the problem with this deal, the bigger problem, was that we were going to be locked into it for 20 years. And the cost of this electricity provided through these gas conversion power ships, conversion to electricity ships, would have been roughly four times the amount of the cost of electricity that we can get from renewable energy projects. And whether we were in load shedding or not, right now, for instance, with no load shedding, we would have been compelled to buy this electricity from them for 20 years at four times the price than we should be. And this was the shocking part of the deal. So we went to court about 2 years ago to have this process interdicted. We wanted to have it reviewed in court, and that process, obviously the court process, is dragged out, eventually came to naught because the minister, and by the way, the Minister of Electricity and Gwede Mantashe of DMRE, and even the presidency at the beginning of this year, 12 months ago, was saying we need car power ships. Well, in hindsight, we want to hear them say that again, and they can't say it, and they wouldn't say it now. So thank goodness ourselves and Green Connection, another NGO, took the effort to tackle this matter in court, tie it up, slow it down until sanity prevailed. So finally, we got here. This is the type of work that we do.
Sounds like we really dodged a bullet there as a country, Wayne. sounds like we could have been in for quite an interesting 20 years. What was the message from the Ministry of Energy now in taking the deal off the table? Was there a final kind of consensus that the deal didn't make sense? I remember having separate conversations with the minister in the Electricity and Energy Ministry at some point, saying that some of the deals on the table don't make sense and need to be looked at. Now, of course, a lot has changed since the start of the year. We've gone through an election. We've gone through different things. Where do we currently stand on this? Have we finally decided that we have enough electricity, that we don't need this sort of deal in the future?
Yeah, well, we certainly don't need this deal, and we don't need any other bad deals that don't make sense from a financial point of view. As a country, we're about 7 or 8% of our electricity coming from renewables. There are many countries around the world that have, 35% of their electricity mix coming from renewables. We've got a long way to go. We've got a lot of opportunity for renewable energy to come into the mix. We also know we need base load. We have aging coal-powered plants that need to be taken off grid, and so that's why we need this integrated resource plan, IRP 2023, which has been long in the making and finalizing. We're giving input to NERSA and the ministry to make sure that we get the energy mix right, so we don't get into situations like this going forward, where we have these knee-jerk reactions to suddenly bring on board new types of energy that don't make sense. Car power ships was a classic case of getting it so wrong in an environment where it was a knee-jerk reaction. And I think there were, we believe, there were a lot of middlemen that were going to make a lot of money in the gas purchase agreements that come with the Scar Power ships, which was probably directing their energy as opposed to what's best for the country. So this deal is off the table, thank goodness. And I think, we need to celebrate the work of civil society in doing so. Because remember, a little while ago, we also stopped in court. We went to court to stop the president from signing that state of disaster on electricity. And that would have given them the powers to shoo in a deal like Car Power Ships as an emergency energy procurement. And so that was also part of our work to stop this nonsensical disaster emergency type of declarations by the presidency in order to shoo in these crazy deals.
Well, we do thank you, Wayne, for the work that you and the Outer team continue to do. Thank you more, especially for saving us 20 years worth of installments that we undoubtedly were probably not as prepared for as we thought. Thank you so much for the conversation. We'll leave it there, Wayne. That was Wayne Duvenacher, CEO of the organization Undoing a Tax Abuse, confirming to us that as of today, according to the Ministry of Energy, the Car Power Ship deal is off the table.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Given that this might be one of the last Wednesdays for the year for our show, I thought we'd take one final look at some of the events throughout the year that have taken place from an enforcement perspective, from an FSCA perspective, and from a financial space. Anyone that knows this show, that knows me, knows that we've been doing this throughout the year in terms of our Wednesdays, our consumer awareness features, trying to prepare you as consumers and as listeners for the world of financial services, particularly when you have to deal with companies or individuals that don't play fair and that don't follow the rules. I'm joined on the line, as usual, by the Divisional Head of Enforcement at the FSCA, Gerard van Dieven, to take a look at the year that was for the FSCA and what 2025 could look like. Good evening, Gerard. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with the reflections of the year. It's been a very, very busy year for the FSCA, for your division within the enforcement team. But take me through just all of the things that you've had to deal with this year.
Good evening, Jimmy. Thank you very much for inviting me once again. So yeah, it was a busy year. It was really a rough year. I'm looking forward to a break. So I think in terms of scams and warnings and those type of things, we had our hands full. There was quite an uptick in crypto scams. You declare it a financial product and you think now you will get the message out there to everybody that this is a high-risk investment, but sounds like the message just went the other way. But of course, it's not the legitimate traders and the crypto providers that we're concerned about. It's a wonderful place for scammers to hide. So if I just look at our statistics, we did spend a lot of time on crypto scams and warning people against that. And certainly the other one, looking at the press releases we made over the year, Jimmy, since January that you always helped with and got the message out, impersonations was clearly a very popular pastime. And your listeners will recall that's impersonating authorized financial services providers, impersonating well-known people, impersonating FSCA staff. Anywhere where there's an opportunity to defraud people, we saw that. We also, of course, spend a lot of time on unregistered financial services business. That's our border patrol. That's always a problem, is keeping people away from the public and the public's funds if they're not properly registered and they don't have the fit and proper requirements that they should have. So on the unregistered stuff and on the scam stuff, yes, I have a team dedicated to that, and they are being kept busy full time. On moving on the crypto issues, as we discussed before, we've licensed a whole lot of crypto providers in the meantime, and we've had more than 400 applications. And so South Africa now has crypto providers in South Africa, and they can work through these regulated entities. There's no reason for our public to get involved in the scams and the shady deals because they've got their crypto providers. You would also recall that we had to set up a special team to deal with those crypto providers who did not apply for a license and is now doing unregistered business. That team is also very busy, I think they've got it under control. And unauthorized insurance, of course, that happens a lot. You know about the issue in the funeral parlor space. We are trying very, very hard as the FECA and in conjunction with the Prudential Authority at the Reserve Bank to try and regularize that industry and to try and convince that industry to get into the fold so that the public is protected. Unfortunately, I have to say, not just unregulated and unregistered entities and firms that misbehaved. We had that NEFG case that we finalized that was actually a registered entity that played around with their clients' funds, and there was millions lost. So you will recall that very recently we imposed the barments of up to 30 years and penalties, and we've handed it over to the police. So a couple of those cases as well that kept my more senior investigation teams very, very busy. So yes, unfortunately, it's not dying down. If I had to talk about trends, I would say unauthorized crypto providers, and of course, copy trading, signals, livestock offers, finfluencers. There are so many issues that keeps us busy. If you want to talk about the year ahead, I think, you know, this is not going to get better. And Jimmy, the reason for that is simply that with all the great things that technology brings us, our scammers and the people on the wrong side of the law, they have access to the same technology and they find it very useful. So I do believe we need to stay on track and stay ahead of the curve on that one. But we will be busy recruiting for a crypto expert. We're busy augmenting the division to get more investigators in so that we make sure we are ready for the next year.
Gerard, I want to move to some other areas within the business. I mean, the FSCA clearly has had its hands full throughout the year. And one of the things that's come up from a trend perspective, and you and I have spoken about this as well, is the promises that have been made, the promises of unrealistic returns, whether from regulated entities or from unregulated entities. Where are you seeing from a consumer point of view? Where are you seeing consumers needing to be more aware and be more conscious of things? We've spoken about putting in the time to just do your own research and do your own homework, but where are we missing it that there are so many things out there that are still scams, still taking advantage of consumers?
Yes, that's a very good question, Jimmy, and it's a topic that we cannot talk about enough. So we put in a tremendous effort in terms of consumer education and in terms of warnings and so forth. And you and I know the message. The message really is, and if I had to summarize that, I would say the one you mentioned, unrealistic returns. There's a reason why it's called unrealistic, because there's no way that anybody can offer you those returns. I would put that right on the top of the list for our public to say, if you see an unrealistic return offer, please know there is such a good chance that you're looking at a scam. And usually, Jimmy, that is coupled with guaranteed profits or guaranteed returns, or your capital is guaranteed, etc. The moment you hear the word guaranteed in an offer, please be very, very careful, because the simple truth in the financial industry is that nothing can ever be guaranteed. That is simply not possible. Nobody can know where the financial markets is going. Nobody can know where a specific investment is going. We know that there's no such thing as too big to fail. We've seen it over the years. So the moment guaranteed comes into the sentence, please just walk away from it. And I think the other thing that your listeners can also consider is you will not easily get a legitimate offer over social media platforms. Things like Telegram. Telegram is so popular with scammers. So if you get these type of offers on media, you have to be very, very careful. And it usually comes with a statement, if you ask, that they don't require a license. They don't require an FSCA license or a Prudential Authority license. That's simply not true. You do require a license if you want to be involved in the financial services industry. So I think those are the things that people must look out for. And the best thing they can do, apart from what you've mentioned, is do your own research, do your own homework. The best thing they can do is just speak to an authorized financial services provider. Our authorized financial services providers, they know about these scams. We have lots of interaction with them and tell them about the trends and so forth. So they will be able to warn you to stay away or give you that peace of mind if it's really a legitimate situation. So I can just implore our public and your listeners to please, any of those things, just stay away.
Gerard, as we go into 2025, obviously the work is not done here just because we are taking a festive break to recoup and to recharge our batteries doesn't mean that these efforts will end here or will stop here. Going into 2025, I imagine the focus is going to be on, aside from continuing much of what's been done up to this point, it's going to be on being even stricter with enforcement.
No, absolutely, Jimmy. We have developed a sanctions guideline to make sure that when we do impose sanctions, that it matters. It has the necessary deterrence value. So you are absolutely right about that. And we've already started implementing that. We're seeing that coming through in the decisions. And we're seeing that coming through in cases where we've been taken on reconsideration or appeal or review. And in by far the majority of these cases, the judges and the Financial Services Tribunal have confirmed the way we approach this. So the most important thing there is disgorgement of any ill-gotten gains. So that is certainly so. But there's another aspect to this as well, Jimmy, and that is that we see a lot of cases that belongs one place and one place only, and that is in a criminal court. So we have substantially strengthened our relationship with our criminal investigation authorities, especially the Hawks, the National Prosecuting Authority, and the Asset Forfeiture Unit. And we're getting closer and closer to a complete collaboration. And that is a project that I will keep on working on until we've perfected it. So we'll see many more of our cases actually getting to trial and decent sentences being imposed. So I'm very happy to say that I've got enough examples now that I can safely say, if you're going to get involved in fraud in the financial industry, you run a very high risk of landing in jail. Eventually, it takes time. I realize that. If you will allow me one comment on the festive break that you spoke about. In fact, Jimmy, it's just the opposite. Things don't die down on the festive break. We all need a break, but unfortunately, that's not how it works. Our experience has been every year that this time of the year, scams actually picks up a lot. So listeners must be specifically careful this time of the year. We always see it. It gets worse.
It gets worse, but you have the power in your hands to make the situation better. Remember to do your homework, friends. do not enter into things that you do not understand. Otherwise, we're going to be having very different conversations going into 2025. Khaira, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. I think we'll leave the conversation there, and we'll definitely pick up on these and other conversations going into the new year. We're not going to stop giving you, the consumer and the listener, the tips that we can come up with as we find these bizarre cases of people trying to take your money. But for now, we'll leave the conversation there. Khaira van Deventer, Divisional Head of Enforcement at the FSCA, joining me to take a look at the FSCA's achievements over the last year and what the new year could potentially look like for the regulator.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This segment is brought to you by Alan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing, Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. It certainly has been a very, very busy year, and on the 1st of September this year, we got official implementation date of the two-pot system, and that's brought about a lot of changes. There's been billions of rands withdrawn from asset managers and fund managers like Alan Gray, and other managers by all of us and all of the individuals that have got their pensions with various institutions. These millions have led us to make very different decisions, and we're going to take a look at the impact of the two-pot system on consumers. I'm joined on the line by Richard Carter from Alan Gray to take a look at this. He's head of assurance at Alan Gray. Good evening, Richard. Thanks so much for taking the time. How have South Africans responded to the new two-pot system?
Thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be with you. There've been a variety of responses, but as you noted there in the intro, several million South Africans actually have dipped into their pension funds for various reasons. Some of those for to pay off pressing debt and to get themselves out of incredibly tight predicaments, but many to fund whether it's Black Friday or Christmas shopping or whatever else, many to be able to afford things that they maybe couldn't have, and to go on what could be termed a spending spree.
Richard, when we look at the two-pot system, obviously this new system now has affected how we look at retirement as a whole, and permanently so, and this has an impact on investment strategies going forward. Does this new two-pot system, or should this new two-pot system rather, affect your retirement planning and your retirement goals just because you've got a new savings pot?
Oh, well, it depends. As always, that's usually the answer, I guess. For some people, if they avoid the temptation to take any money out of their out of their pot at all, and they just carry on saving as before, then it needn't make any change whatsoever. But for many people who can't do that and who are going to take money out of their retirement savings, it should lead to some rethinking, because if you're taking money out, then that ultimately means it's going to be less at the end, and you need to do something about it. If you don't do anything about it, you're going to get to retirement with a whole lot less to live off than you would have had. So for people who can't resist that and who are going to take out money out of their pension fund, they need to sit down and look at how much they're putting in. As I said, if they don't do that, they could end up worse off.
Mm. Richard, you mentioned that for some people that withdrawal from their retirement pot, as was allowed by legislation, was used for Black Friday expenses. Some of it was used to pay down debt, all sorts of different things. But this new savings component that we now have, this new savings pot that's given us three pots instead of two, or seven instead of one, that new pot, if we look at it from a use case perspective, can we look at that pot as an emergency fund? Is that a wise thing to do? Are there pros and cons to looking at it from there?
Yeah, that's a great question. The thing is that if you don't increase how much you're saving, then what you're actually doing is dividing up what you were saving before into these two different pots and trying to use that money now for something that it previously wasn't intended for. And so that's why I say it can leave you less well off because you're now using it as an emergency fund, whereas previously you were regarding it as retirement money. If you increase how much you're saving overall, and you do think about it as, well, I've got an emergency savings pot and I've got a retirement pot, but in aggregate I'm saving more, then sure, all very well. Think of it as an emergency pot, and it does have some pros. You know, you're getting to save into it before you pay tax, so it's quite an advantageous way of doing it. And if you don't need it for an emergency, then it will build up into a meaningful asset over time, which can either be part of your retirement savings or some other future need. Then that's a very responsible way to approach it. I think that the con, as we said, there are pros and cons, is if all you do is save what you were before, and every year you take everything out of that savings pot just because you can, then that could leave you a whole lot worse off than you would have been.
Richard, I want to look at the time component that you spoke about, but I want to look at it from a slightly different perspective. We've often had conversations, especially around the two pots, that time, when it comes to retirement, is probably one of the greatest assets you can have, in that it allows you the benefit of being able to compound things and grow things over an exponential kind of period of time, right? So
that's right.
In dipping into your savings, or in dipping into these retirement funds over the festive season, over January, to cover things like emergency school fees, emergency expenses, and all of that, what's the impact that has from a time perspective on your long-term goals?
I mean, it can be very detrimental. I think for many people, this initial amount of up to $30,000, you know, might not be such a big deal in the scheme of things, especially if you've been saving for many years and you're going to continue saving for many years. And for those people, you know, it's more important to think about, you know, well, now one third of what I save goes into this pot every single year, and how responsible am I going to be with that? But absolutely, time, you know, saving enough and then leaving it over the decades while one works is the only way to build up a meaningful retirement pot. There is no quick fix for this. It does take time. It takes the disciplined contribution plus the investment return. And if you take the money out, then you are, you know, robbing yourself of that component and that opportunity for the investment return to really work in your favor. So yes, it robs you of that time, and it can be, as I said, it can be quite detrimental unless it's used wisely. For those people who compensate for that by putting more in and then being disciplined about what they take out, they can make time work for them.
You mentioned discipline and you mentioned contributions, Richard, and I want to take a look at the longer term kind of objectives that you put in, or the outcomes that you get from being disciplined, from having that consistency of your contributions. What are some of the easy wins that investors and savers can put in place to ensure that by the time I retire, I've met my objectives, I haven't put myself in an awkward position where I don't have enough money for retirement? What are some of the easy wins in the short to medium term that will benefit you in the long term?
Look, I mean, I don't want to pretend that anything to do with money is easy, because we all know that it isn't. But I think those people that effectively, you know, view that that amount that's going into a retirement fund almost similarly to tax. It just comes off and it's gone and it gets saved every month, and I really don't keep trying to do anything with it. I'm not trying to manage it actively. I'm just, you know, handing it over and it's gone, and I leave it for the decades. They're going to be in the best place possible. I think that when we start having a very, this more short-term mindset, and we include the amount going into the retirement fund into our budgeting, and then this month maybe I can afford it, and then next month maybe I can't, you make it harder for yourself. I think if you can almost, like, rule that out, it comes off first, before tax even, and it's gone. And it's for the future me, and that's it. I think that is an important first step to almost protecting that money and you're not relying on it for the short and medium term needs.
responsible decision-making leads to a comfortable retirement. I think we'll leave the conversation there. Richard, thanks so much for taking the time. Richard Carter, Head of Assurance at Allan Gray, taking stock of the two-pot system and what these changes mean for your retirement. The segment was brought to you by Allan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's time for Executive Lounge on a Wednesday. We do this every Wednesday, speaking to executives around the country and around the world and getting to know them a little bit better. This week's executive is a director at Atlas Finance. You may have seen them on television ads and in other sorts of advertising. I'm joined on the line by Naresh Gopichand to take a look at what he does when he's not running Atlas Finance with his team. Good evening, Naresh. Thanks so much for taking the time. How does one get into the lending space?
Yeah, so Jimmy, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, so getting into the lending space is sometimes I don't know if it is a career of choice rather than something you end up with. And that was my my experience. It wasn't something that I was looking for. And it just so happened that I was looking for a job and ended up at Atlas. And 28 years later, here I am. But I think it's become more formal now than it was 30 years ago. And there's a lot of different avenues. And we're seeing a lot more entrants coming into the micro-lending space at the moment.
Mm. Naresh, what would you say is the one thing you enjoy most about being a director at Atlas? I mean, obviously you see many different challenges on a day-to-day. You might have to wear many different hats. What would you say is the most enjoyable thing about what you do today?
So I think it's about helping people, Jimmy. And I think for me, where I am at the moment is not where I started. So when I started at Atlas, I was there in the branches at the call face speaking to people and listening to their challenges that they are experiencing and being able to help them with, you know, whatever it is that they needed at the time, no matter how small, and then them saying thank you and walking out knowing that once they leave their office, you know, their kids' school fees are going to get paid. They're going to put food on that table. Is those small things that, you know, may seem day-to-day stuff for us, but not for everybody. And I think that's what keeps me engaged in this business, is that assisting people and seeing them as they exit our branches, how satisfied they are, and knowing that, you know, there's somebody here that has helped them.
Mm. Naresh, as someone that works in the professional sort of private lending space and the micro lending space that Atlas exists within, I want to get your thoughts around South African consumer, the pressure that South African consumers are often placed under, that they've been placed under for the last couple of years, and the propensity that that leads to things like people going to loan sharks and all of that because they might not be able to access finance any other way. How do you feel about your role within that ecosystem, understanding that, of course, companies like loan sharks out there are not necessarily out to play by the same rules that you play by?
Yeah, so I think that's always a challenge and will continue being a challenge, Jimmy. And I think when you look at how the industry is regulated, I think plays a big part in that. You know, we can't have a regulator that's soft, because an unregulated industry gives rise to unscrupulous behavior, right? So you have to ensure that everybody plays by the same rules. And I think it is about education. And I think that's what we at Atlas are trying to do, is trying to educate not just our clients, but the public in general. And get and if they are educated, they are aware of what the pitfalls are in going to somebody that is not registered, that is not playing by the same rules as everybody else. And I think that's important for the public to know, that when you are looking to access finance from somebody who is regulated, somebody who has a NCR number, somebody who has who is registered with the Microfinance South Africa, you know, and these are displayed in their stores, on their websites, and I think that's the important thing. If everybody out there can be more aware of who they are borrowing from, I think that will lead to more people being satisfied with the service that they get and not being overcharged or being taken advantage of, Jimmy.
Let's educate the people, Naresh. What's your favorite holiday destination?
The most exciting place that I've been to in my life is New York City. I think that was an amazing experience for me. I've only been there once, and I loved every minute of it. But the next destination for me and my family would be India. And I think there's so much to explore there. And that's what I'm looking forward to in the next year.
Okay. And in terms of food, what's your favorite go-to meal, go-to restaurant, go-to cuisine?
So being Indian, I'm a bit biased, Jimmy. And I love a good curry.
Okay.
I love a good curry. I can't go more than a couple of days without a curry. And my favorite, and being vegetarian as well, is a nice sugar bean curry and roti.
Huh. That's interesting. Any preferred restaurant or cook that makes it? There's one right answer here.
My wife, Jimmy.
There we go. Things are safe. We got the right answer out. Naresh, when you think about your family and you think about your downtime, what's the one thing that you would say you enjoy most about being able to be with your family in having achieved a sustainable work-life balance?
Yeah, so I think my wife, my kids, extremely supportive. And, during my downtime, I love spending time with them. For some reason, Jimmy, I just can't be alone. And I love being with my family. And, you know, we do things together. My kids are relatively small. And, they want to learn how to skate. And, you know, I'm trying to rollerblade with them and, take them out, show them different places, introducing them to our culture. You know, those are all things that we love doing together. So spending time with my family is extremely, extremely important to me, Jimmy.
Mm. What about extreme sports, Naresh? Are you a hiker? Do you prefer a beach?
I love a beach, Jimmy.
Okay.
I love a beach. A beach holiday is the best holiday for me. And I think I'm now trying to get into some sort of, not extreme sports, but I was recently introduced to paddle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really getting into it. So I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying playing it. And it keeps me fit. I'm not one for the gym. So these type of activities keep me going, yeah.
Naresh, are you reading anything at the moment?
I'm not a big reader, but I am currently reading a book that I've already read, actually. It's the second time I'm going through it. It's a book by, I'm not sure many people will be familiar with, but it's a book by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And it's a book, the book is called The Science of Self-Realization.
It's a very interesting book to introspect on and to reflect on. Naresh, what's the worst thing about a school run? What do you absolutely hate about having to do a school run with the kids?
Oh, Jimmy, every morning is to get them ready to get to school. And I'm in the car. I'm fortunate that school is, you know, about 5, maybe 10 minutes at the max away from where we live. And we're always late. We're always getting there at the time the bell rings, Jimmy. And it's just 10 minutes away. And to get them into that car, Jimmy, it's a task on its own.
Every day is a new mission with them.
Every day.
Naresh, what's the one thing that your team might be surprised to learn about you that they might not already know about you?
I think one of the things that I mentioned to the guys is I don't have a tertiary education, Jimmy. I came straight out of matric, tried to get a job, did a few odds and ends here and there, and everything that I've learned has come organically. It's come working within the business, understanding our business. And I think I was fortunate in the fact that I started at the bottom. So I've worked in every position the business has to offer. So nobody can tell me much about the business because I understand it from the bottom to where I am now. And I don't have an MBA or a PhD or any of those fancy degrees. But I understand where I am, and I understand how what needs to be done.
Well, as somebody that has somewhat of a tertiary experience, I can safely say that sometimes these things are overrated. It does come down to what it is you're able to learn and give back through. And clearly, you've done very well for yourself in that respect. I think we'll leave the conversation on that great note, Naresh. Thanks so much for spending time with us and giving us a bit more color around what it is that your life looks like. That was Naresh Gopichand, who is the director at Atlas Finance, joining us for this week's Executive Lounge. It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.